questions facing our country. Presented in the public interest by America's favorite magazine, Reader's Digest. In association with the Freedoms Foundation at Valley Forge. Created and produced by Theodore Granick. This month's special broadcast is based on the article, Why Johnny Can't Get a Job, by Lester Vealey, appearing in the January issue of the Reader's Digest.
This is Theodore Granick. The place is most any of our great cities. It is a prosperous time. More Americans are working than ever before. More American families have more to spend than ever before. Yet gnawing at the hearts of our great cities is a peculiar and baffling problem. One of every five boys between the ages of 16 and 19 who is out of school and looking for work cannot find a job. This rate of idleness among the young is four times as great as the rate of unemployment among adults. Why can't so many of our young find a place for themselves in the workaday world? This is the question we shall explore on this special broadcast of All America Wants to Know.
All right, kids, let's all sit down so Robin can blow out the candles. Now, Robbie, blow real hard. One candle, two candles, three candles, and one for good luck.
One for good luck. Mom is already thinking about the three-year-old's future. That's why this mother, if she's a well-informed parent, will make a visit to her optometrist one of the musts in Robin's three-year-old life. A thorough vision examination is necessary at an early age to determine if the child's many visual skills are beginning to develop as they should. Another important benefit of that early examination is that it provides a record with which the optometrist can compare later development. A child seldom realizes he or she has a vision deficiency. If you have a young child, the American Optometric Association urges you to help that child to grow up healthy, happy, and wise by guarding that precious vision. A thorough professional examination at least once a year will do it.
In recent months, the Reader's Digest has turned a searchlight on the changes and challenges produced by automation. In the current issue, roving editor Lester Vealey looks behind the scenes of our changing times to see what new forces are at work on the lives of our young. He calls his article, Why Johnny Can't Get a Job. And now, Lester Vealey, why can't Johnny get a job?
Well, to begin with, it's not because there's a shortage of jobs. Jobs are actually going begging, not just in one place, but all over the country. And not only in one industry, but in many industries.
Johnny, 18 years old, is part of an army of some million boys and girls between 16 and 19 who drop out before finishing high school. Uneducated and untrained, they are increasingly the Americans nobody wants. Johnny can pick up his big city newspaper and thumb through 20 pages or more of urgent appeals. There are jobs available, but they are not for Johnny. For the only kind of job Johnny can fill is one which needs a good back and a pair of hands. And these unskilled jobs are increasingly hard to find. Yet while Johnny can't find a job, jobs are begging for men, as in any refrigerated loft in New York's famous Gonsevoort Market. An army of some 4,000 butchers prepares the steaks, chops, and roasts that homes and restaurants all over the eastern seaboard will consume. But this army has a recruiting problem. We learn why from Pete Peterson, meat wholesaler.
If it were possible for us to get four or five butchers with the same capabilities as the men you've seen here today, we could increase our staff of 35 butchers to 40. We could increase the volume of our business another $500,000. We are unable to get the men from the union, and younger people are not attracted to our business. This in spite of the fact that the monies that they earn are very, very commensurate. Five of our men made over $10,000 last year, one over $11,000, and I'd like you to meet the newest member of our butcher family. Walter, would you please tell the folks your name?
My name is Walter Rickman.
You're how old?
I'm 21.
And you've been here how long?
A little bit over 4 years.
And last year you earned how much?
$8,400.
$8,400 a year. How is that for a boy just 4 years out of high school? There are still other skilled workers who are worth their weight in gold. We almost said, worth their weight in dough. They are journeyman bakers, trained men who can bake bread, prepare and shape dough for sweet rolls, decorate a cake. They are a scarce breed. Most learned their trade in Europe. But as immigration dried up, so did the flow of bakers. That is why a man who learns this trade may never worry about a job for the rest of his life.
I belong to Baker's Union Local 3. I am 83 years of age. No man at this table is under 65. I would like to take my pension and to retire. But the boss tells me he needs me to stay on. The young men today don't have the skill.
Getting and holding men like Lewis Hausman raises some tough problems for management.
There's no question about it. There's a real need for skilled craftsmen in this industry. Our average skilled man is over 50 years of age. We have plenty of jobs available, but only for skilled men. Many industries like ours would expand today, but because of the lack of trained men, we are unable to.
In some lines of business, the shortage of skilled men isn't only holding up expansion, it is threatening the life of industries. Our ocean-going liners are having difficulty getting the men they need to service their kitchens. Skilled chefs, for instance. As a result, they're finding increasing trouble in competing with foreign lines. And it isn't only in the skilled food trades that there are shortages of men. There are shortages in other industries as well.
Plasterers at $47 a day. Bricklayers at $5.35 an hour. But they are hard to find. According to State Employment Service experts in New York State, jobs go unfilled in 35 skilled trades, from television repairmen to auto mechanics. In Chicago, a body and fender man can earn up to $10,000 a year, but the union can't supply them. Some hospitals, desperate for nurses, are importing students from the Philippines. Clothing factories need tailors. Clothing stores can't find men to do simple alterations. Garment factories have moved out of Chicago because they couldn't get sewing machine operators. And offices are clamoring for typists. Many cities lack tool and die makers. Some need electricians. Others could use shoe repairmen, welders. If you have a skill, you can sell it. We asked the government's chief expert on job trends, Commissioner Ewan Clagg of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, to explain the lopsided job situation.
Each year, about 2.5 million young people leave school to enter the nation's workforce. Most of them succeed in finding jobs, but some do not. What is the problem? One difficulty they face is the fact that we have a great shift in employment occurring in this country. Not all industries are employing more people. There are those which have lost jobs. On the other hand, there are other industries in which there is a substantial increase. For example, take farming, in which there was a loss during the last 5 years of 750,000 jobs. This is an industry in which 50 years ago, one worker in every three in the nation's labor force was engaged in farming. At the present time, it's one worker out of 12. You may call it automation or whatever you like. It represents the method of producing more goods with less workers. Mining, manufacturing, transportation are other types of industries which have lost jobs during the last 5 years.
When the government revealed its latest unemployment figures last month, they underline the loss in blue-collar, unskilled jobs that Commissioner Clagg is talking about. Unemployment had jumped. It was close to the high point of the last recession. What made unemployment climb? Young people looking for their first jobs. A fresh crop of 150,000 like Johnny. They, like Johnny, were looking. But the answer was always the same. No, if you have no training. No, if you have no skills. But the government report showed that new jobs are being created. Let's listen to Commissioner Clagg.
On the other hand, banks, insurance companies, stores, filling stations, restaurants, hotels, and government, particularly in the form of teachers, have been increasing their employment. The significant point for young people is that the jobs that are disappearing are those blue-collar jobs in which the men are being replaced by machines. The jobs which are developing are those which require more education, more training, and greater skill.
What Commissioner Clagg is telling us, then, is that automation is a huge searchlight. It lights up and makes visible a giant flaw in our educational system. Our schools are flunking their biggest job, the job of preparing our young for the workaday world. Even boys who finish high school don't have the skills to sell to an employer.
You've heard how badly New York City needs butchers and bakers. The only vocational school to turn them out is a 100-year-old food trades vocational high school in the Greenwich Village section of Manhattan. The ancient classrooms are dangerously crowded. Equipment is obsolete. Boys don't have the chance to work with the modern tools they'll have to handle later in the trade.
Teddy, you have anything in the oven?
Also, we can use it.
Still hasn't been fixed. Well, we ordered standard heavy-duty ovens about 7 or 8 years ago. We indicated the manufacturers, the nature of the ovens, the type of ovens which are used in most bake shops and in cooking establishments. What we received were these ovens, and they haven't been functioning properly since the time they were delivered. The malfunctioning or the improper operation is due to the fact that the ovens go out on and off, they leak gas, and they've become a hazard. We've spent lots of money trying to repair them, but apparently they just can't be repaired, and now they're nothing more than fixtures which are used to store pans and utensils. This is another indication, of course, of the fact that the equipment that must be used in this school must be similar to the standard heavy-duty equipment used in the industry and the trade.
Teachers are asked to perform miracles under impossible conditions. In the butcher class, tools are far behind the times. Then there's a safety factor. Young boys wield knives at such close quarters, it sometimes appears they may butcher each other.
Our conditions here, our crowded conditions, create a dangerous situation. In industry, we would be allotted much more room than we have here. Another condition we have is the fact that the room is entirely too warm, causing the meat to spoil more quickly. In industry, rooms would be air-conditioned. We also have a situation where meat is to be carried from the trucks into the shop. Some of our boys must carry as much as 150, 160 pounds. In industry, we'd have conveyors to bring that meat in, avoiding the carry.
The situation in this school is summed up by the harassed principal, Dr. Frank Carlin.
It is impossible for us to give our boys a good high school education under these conditions. The shop building is overcrowded. As a result, several of our teachers and all of our boys must walk, in good weather or bad, over 1 mile to their academic classes. Our teachers have tried to do the best possible job with the inadequate facilities now available to them. We as educators have been trying for 20 years to obtain a new building. The food industry has been clamoring with us. As yet, we still don't have it.
The junior high school from which Johnny graduated probably was a bright, new, shiny one, with an elegant auditorium and even a swimming pool. How did he feel about going on to learn a trade in a building that dates back to the Civil War? Johnny wasn't interested. There are other bright boys, Last June, the school graduated only 72 bakers, butchers, and cooks at a time when hundreds are needed. Is this antiquated school an exception? How good is vocational education elsewhere? Last year, President Kennedy named a panel of consultants to look into the vocational education problem. The chairman of the panel, Dr. Benjamin Willis, superintendent of Chicago's public schools, found that vocational education is the other side of the tracks in education.
We also found that vocational training or job training is a part of the educational program needing expansion and some redirection. Vocational education must get more than crumbs from the educational table. Only 4% of the public school funds go for vocational education. In some of our cities, such as Philadelphia and Kansas City, it may be considerably less. In my own city, City of Chicago, we must have more schools and more programs for more people. What does this mean to our young people? Well, consider this. Of every 100 students, some 15 will go on to win a college diploma. Most will not get beyond high school. If we neglect vocational training, we neglect the needs of the great majority. The growing problem of idle young people, especially in the metropolitan centers, convinces me that a youth schooling must be tailored to fit his need.
Vocational education lacks status. To school administrators, guidance counselors, and students, it is a second-class educational citizen. Although only 15% of all children who start out at the first grade will go on to win a college diploma, school administrators concentrate on academic courses as if all children will go to Yale or Harvard or Michigan State. Principals and school boards measure their success by the number of students they place in college. The job needs of the 85% who won't go beyond high school are neglected. Mother doesn't want her boy to go to vocational school. She wants him to wear a white collar. So does his guidance counselor. The tests may say the boy is good with his hands. Still, he is pushed toward academic studies. Is it any wonder that vocational education money, scarce as it is, doesn't go where it will do the most good? One-third of all such funds goes to train farmers, although farmers now make up only 6% of the workforce. Few fields are growing as fast as retailing, but we spend virtually nothing to teach young people how to hold jobs in stores. And we spend as much money to teach girls how to cook and sew for the home as we do for teaching boys how to hold a job in industry. The situation approaches a nationwide scandal. New York. It will take 10 to 15 years to catch up to today's needs. Chicago. 8 out of 9 vocational high schools are hand-me-downs, converted old elementary schools. Kansas City. The only vocational school building, vintage 1890, is located in the town's worst slum. Vocational teachers are hard to come by. Why should a good machinist teach in a school when he can earn more money in industry? Chicago could use 500 vocational teachers. A full-time recruiter is out beating the bushes for them, but with little success. Then there's a matter of status again. There is less status in teaching shop than in teaching Shakespeare.
It is time to ask ourselves, what is public education for? Is it to prepare our young for the workaday world? If it is, we had better think of the needs of the majority who won't get beyond high school. Some towns have faced up to this problem. Those that have provide solutions for other cities to follow.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin, known as the machine shop of America, has overcome the vocational education status problem. Job training has been taken out of the hands of the regular school administrators, who usually starve it to death, and has been placed under independent vocational education boards.
These can raise their own money by levying their own taxes. As a result, vocational education gets the attention it deserves. Milwaukee's Central Vocational School is the biggest institution of its kind in the country, and is a world showpiece as well. Last year, some 180 teams of observers, 70 of them from abroad, came to study the Milwaukee School as a model. By way of comparison, Milwaukee has only one-third of the population of Philadelphia, but Milwaukee spends 24 times as much on vocational education. The total is $4,800,000 per year. The school works closely with Milwaukee's industries. It keeps abreast of the city's job opportunities as well as changes in technology. When the Milwaukee Journal put in new linotype setting equipment, the printers learned how to run the new machines by means of a special course at the vocational school. This helped them keep their jobs. Milwaukee has the lowest dropout rate of any big city. When a student gets job training that he can relate to his earning needs later, he remains in school. The dropout rate for our country as a whole is 40%. That is, 40% of the students drop out before finishing high school. In Milwaukee, the dropout rate is a remarkable 5.5%. Such towns as Allentown, Pennsylvania, and others tie in schoolwork with on-the-job training in industry. The school finds out whether a high school student intends to go on to college. If not, a guidance counselor discusses a vocation with the boy and his parents. On choosing one of 13 trades that range from cabinet making to plumbing and TV repair, the boy submits to aptitude tests. High school counselors, who cooperate closely with employers, place the boy in a part-time job in his senior year. There, he divides his time between class and job. 3 weeks in one, 3 weeks in the other. The student learns to work with modern tools and equipment. He learns how to get along with adults. He works for pay with a skilled supervisor. Most important, he has something to work for, the job that will await him when he graduates. Will it be a boy reporting for a job? A boy wondering how to get through the day.
There are few things as tragic as young people marking time. How long will these young people have to wait? When will we give them something worth waiting for? A decent school, a chance for a job.
Unemployment among our young has been called social dynamite. Lack of opportunity, frustration, and hopelessness lead to rebellion. The idle youngster becomes the delinquent teenage problem. Why is it that the mayors of our cities somehow find the money needed for monuments, for baseball stadiums, for world's fairs, but seldom for vocational schools, which are less glamorous, but can substitute a payroll check for a relief check? With a job, Johnny is an insider, a member of the human race. Without a job, Johnny is an outsider, one stick of human dynamite waiting to explode.
The National Safety Council reminds car drivers a seatbelt may save your life or someone else's, or prevent severe disabling injuries, especially when winter hazards make driving even more difficult and risky. Before a winter accident proves the need, install seatbelts in your car. And on every trip, far or near, and in all kinds of weather, fasten those belts before driving. Remember, it's always care weather for safe driving, and it's always seatbelt weather for preventing tragedy. the lopsided picture of jobs begging for men while men beg for jobs suggests that something must be done to bring the two together. That something must be nothing less than a new kind of schooling to train for today's needs. This is Theodore Granick bidding you goodbye. American business, bulwark of our free enterprise system, office machines humming a song of success, and reporting on every phase of our economy, from Main Street to Wall Street, is radio. American business depends upon radio.
All America Wants to Know, a monthly discussion of the great questions facing our country, is presented in the public interest by the Reader's Digest, the world's most widely read magazine, in association with the Freedoms Foundation at Valley Forge. Created and produced by Theodore Granick. We invite you to be with us again next month when a group of distinguished citizens will discuss a subject of national importance based on an article from the February issue of the Reader's Digest on All America Wants to Know.
Of the United Press International and the KURL newsroom, here's the headline news and weather.
A severe winter storm has brought some heavy snow, sleet, freezing rain, and thunderstorms from the Canadian border to the Gulf States. Reports in Washington say more than $10 million is missing from the bank at Katanga. And Katanga President Chombi, who fled to neighboring Rhodesia last night, says he will return to his provincial capital of Elizabethville on Monday. The Swiss Embassy in Havana says from 80 to 100 Americans may be able to leave Havana tomorrow for the United States. Those are the headlines. Here, complete news at 3:55.